Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined by the great Andrew McCarthy. It really makes my week to have a chance to visit with him, and I'm sure it does yours as well. He is, of course, the former federal prosecutor turned pundit extraordinaire, now a best-selling author several times over, including books like Willful Blindness, The Grand Jihad, and Faithless Execution, all extraordinarily important contributions to our understanding of the challenges of our time, which he shares with us each week. Andy, welcome. It's good to have you as always.
Frank, great to be with you.
Well, I've been talking in the course of the program about Iran, and I think maybe we ought to start there. First, there is this extraordinary report that the Director of National Intelligence, a man who you'll recall very well thought the Muslim Brotherhood was a largely secular group a couple of years ago, now seems not to think that either Iran or Hezbollah constitute terrorist threats. What make you of this latest finding by Director Clapper?
Yeah, it really is a continuation of this administration's illusion, I guess, that if they close their eyes and wish for it hard enough, that that will make it so. They have evidently the intelligence community, not all of it, but that which is headed by the head of national intelligence, that's Clapper, has purged Iran and Hezbollah from its list of global terrorist threats. Interestingly, the Defense Department's intelligence agency continues to not only list but pound away at the fact that Iran and Hezbollah are not only terrorist threats, they're terrorists. So it looks like the intelligence community is at war with itself, which I guess is they're at least showing a little more aggression to each other than they are to our enemies, I'd say.
Well, and this is all the more interesting because, of course, as you know, Andy, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, was, I think, effectively purged out of there because he was too hardline. So it's all the more, I guess, important that we're seeing some backbone still left in that organization. But again, you're a serious national security professional, and you've watched a lot of foolishness out of this administration. Obviously, this has a lot to do with trying to do a makeover on Iran in connection with the deal that they're now trying to strike.
Frank, I think the rationale for this, if there is one, I think sensibly there's no rationale for it, but the thinking goes as follows, that, you know, now the administration has decided that the main enemy in the region is ISIS, and they think that Iran is cooperating against ISIS, and that the way it's cooperating is by aiding and abetting many Shiite militias, which up until 5 minutes ago we were regarding as Shiite terrorist organizations. So now that they've decided that they like the idea that Iran is acting aggressively through these proxies against ISIS, those proxies are no longer, by them at least, considered terrorists. In the meantime, as the Defense Intelligence Agency points out, Hezbollah and the same Shiite network of terror cells is adamant that if the United States returns to the region, they will return to the jihad against the United States. So they haven't changed. What's changed is the mental gymnastics of the Obama administration, but the players are exactly the same. And I think for a long time, Obama's been trying to pull us into an idea that's very popular with Turkey and with at least some of the Europeans, that Hamas and Hezbollah are just resistance organizations. We should be viewing them as political organizations that are dedicated to resistance against Israel, which in their mind is perfectly legitimate, not terrorist organizations.
Yeah, and we've actually had the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, make a similar kind of representation that they're moderates within those groups that we can work with. And I guess, Andy, the thing that is so alarming about this is as you put it very well in your book, willful blindness that this requires of us to ignore not only present dangers, but those that are growing by the day, and unfortunately not just in the nuclear context. Andy, before we let you go, let me ask you about a couple of other things quickly. One of the things that you've been bird-dogging very closely, fortunately, at National Review Online and I think at PJ Media as well, is the unfolding drama of the Emailgate scandal, as it's been called, of Hillary Rodham Clinton. You were one of the people who most powerfully brought to all of our attention the ties between a woman who's been very close to her for a long time, Huma Abedin, to the Muslim Brotherhood. As I understand it, she is now one of those that Hillary Clinton has acknowledged is determining what emails should be purged rather than turned over to the federal government. Give us a sense of what this could mean in terms of a very sanitized version of what Hillary Clinton was doing as Secretary of State and communicating about during that time.
Yeah, well, I think, Frank, that both Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, who's also another longtime Clinton aide who's apparently involved in this purge process, are not the best sources of an objective decision about what information should be in the government files and what shouldn't. I think they're, you know, Ms. Abedin obviously has the connections that we've outlined to the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists. And Ms. Mills has been, at least by the account of one witness, involved in keeping documents away from the State Department's own, Mrs. Clinton's own, hand-picked accountability review board after Benghazi. So they were actually obstructing their own investigation. So not the best sources. And I'd also point out that they're both, certainly Ms. Abedin, I think this has been confirmed by the Times, I think correct with Ms. Mills as well, they've both got email addresses on the Clinton system. So, you know, their own communications ought to be looked at, much less having them decide what communications anybody gets to see.
Well, and again, raising the question of official conduct of business through that channel, which, as you say, has all kinds of problems with it, quite possibly including criminal. And Andy, just say a word about that point you made in your piece over the weekend about classified information being almost certainly involved here, whether it's classified documents per se or not. And I must tell you, I find it incredible that there aren't also classified documents. But just again, from the point of view of the policies of the State Department itself promulgated by Hillary Clinton, how does this square?
Yeah, it can't be squared, Frank. The Secretary of State and her top advisors operate at the highest level of U.S. foreign and national security policy. A good deal of what they work with is classified information. I would say over half of what they work with. And while it's been stressed, as I understand it, by Mrs. Clinton in her statements that, you know, she never had classified documents on her system, that may very well be right, because you have to go in the government to a separate system to access national security and national defense secrets. But you're also not allowed to talk about that information. And it would be very surprising to me if there were not allusions to the information that's in classified documents as opposed to the documents themselves.
All of which would have been a field day for bad guys who almost certainly were inside the wire on her emails. Andy, lastly, quickly, there is apparently a continuing commitment on the part of Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate to bring Loretta Lynch's nomination to the floor for a vote to be the next Attorney General. And yet, he is insistent that nothing can take priority over a human trafficking piece of legislation. I'm sympathetic to the idea that that ought to be sanctioned, but I do wonder whether the continuing determination of the majority leader to confirm someone who has clearly indicated she supports the president's unconstitutional conduct on amnesty is kind of bizarre. What's up with that?
Yeah, I think that McConnell obviously should not be bringing this nomination to the floor. I mean, you have someone who's nominated to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States who has said in her testimony that she supports the president's unilateral, unconstitutional amnesty and his non-enforcement of the immigration laws. To me, that should be the end of the matter. She doesn't get a vote.
It's a bad sign, indeed.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I would argue, with, as we talked about last week, Andy, that we ought to make sure that she allows and enables people who would be her subordinates, the U.S. attorneys, to go get those servers from Hillary Clinton.
Yes, at a minimum, because only the Justice Department can do that.
You've made that point very well in your wonderful writings. Andy McCarthy, they include, of course, your columns at National Review Online and PJ Media, as well as your extraordinarily important books, including most recently one that's all over the map at the moment, Faithless Execution. Keep up the great work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, Congressman Robert Pettinger joins us. We'll talk about what all this might mean in terms of threats to us and what you can do about them. Straight ahead.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.